As they say, every cloud has a silver lining. So what can we take out of the last couple of years of COVID to make our futures better, to give us a silver lining? Well, in my last podcast, I was chatting with Ken Race, Australia's leading property tax strategist and director of Metropole Wealth Advisory, and we started to share 20 insights that we learned personally from COVID-19 in the hope that if you learn from these, you'd be a better property investor, business person or entrepreneur, and that would be your silver lining. Now, there were so many things to discuss, we just didn't get through the list. So in today's show, we're going to continue with our thoughts. Whether you're a beginning property investor or experienced professional, I'm sure there'll be something in my chat with Ken that'll benefit you. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialise in helping you grow, protect and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
In my chat with Ken Race last week, we discussed how the naysayers and the property pessimists were wrong last year and the year before. Despite prolonged lockdowns, despite no immigration, no international students, the threat of high employment and all the pessimistic predictions for our housing markets, the value of many houses around Australia grew by more than 20% in the last year alone, and in many locations over 30%. So last week, Ken Race and I started talking about the many property lessons that we learned from COVID to make us better property investors and help advise our clients. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to that podcast, after you listen to this one, please go back to your favourite podcast app and listen to last week's show. I think Ken and I gave some great insights, well, even if I say so myself, and I'm looking forward to our chat again today. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Michael.
Well, last week we had a bit of a chat about the lessons that we learned from COVID, and I'd like to continue on with those. But in the last podcast, we talked about the concept that we learned that the property market was too big to fail, as was the banking system. The government recognized the importance of consumer confidence and the wealth effect in keeping our economy moving, and we discussed that a little bit. We also discussed the importance of the knowledge-based economy, which allowed people to work from home wherever they wanted to, rather than having to work in the factory using their hands, and the importance then of demographics, knowing where to buy investment properties based on where the locals are based in the knowledge-based economy. We talked about the importance of not relying on one income stream, having cash buffers in place, the importance of having financial security by having assets. And we finished off our last chat talking about expecting the market to correct, Ken, knowing that that's just part of the normal cycle. But moving forward, let's just continue on with that concept of we know the market's going to correct. And I discussed my thoughts about expecting it rather than putting a forecast on a time frame. Each correction, Ken, is different, it's unique, it's unpredictable. These various causes for volatility, and we always say this time is different, but you can actually protect yourself from these corrections by owning the right assets and by having them in the right structures and having the right financial buffers in place.
That's right. And when I was putting some notes together for what we would talk about in this podcast, can I say I was actually a little bit surprised at how many lessons we could think of to share with the audience. And as such, it really then becomes the platform for, as you say, the next unexpected that we know is going to happen. So let's use what we've learned last time to manage the future.
Sure. Interestingly, one of the things that's happened in previous occasions is the market tends to overcorrect in both directions. Enthusiasm, FOMO gets people to buy at the end of a cycle in the boom time stages, buy the wrong properties, pay too much, not have financial buffers in place, take shortcuts. And then usually at the other end of the cycle, during the downturn, prices particularly in the share market, which is more volatile, overcorrect. There wasn't that wide swing in property values. But as we started to say a minute ago, A-grade properties, investment-grade properties, held their own. B-grade properties dropped in value a little bit more. So I guess it's important to choose the right properties in the right location. And the importance of financial buffers for a rainy day have always been something that you've advocated to your clients.
That's right. And just following on from those cycles, I saw it. It was like black and white for me that the turning of the cycle was actually happened at two different time spots. Once when the knowledgeable investor who had experience and knowledge could see that we were getting close and therefore put in place strategies to buy. And the second one is when the normal investor picked up newspaper articles, heard different people talk, and then came into the market. And there was actually quite a large time gap between the two. So not having that knowledge, actually, you missed out on, I was going to say, almost 6 months of that market growth because you didn't get in not knowing that the market was actually starting to turn.
Very much so. It's important not to buy at the peak of the cycle where you're going to wait for a couple of years. And while it would be nice to time at the bottom of the market by having insider knowledge, I think over the years I've realized that perfect timing has little impact. Now, years ago I read Warren Buffett's stories about be fearful when others are greedy and be greedy when others are fearful and how important it is to time the market. But I think most people get it wrong. Ken, I've noticed that successful investors, strategic investors, ones who've done well, do well in good times and in bad. Doesn't really matter. The cycle doesn't seem to matter to them. And I've also noticed that unsuccessful investors do bad in bad times and don't do much better in good times. So again, the market timing doesn't seem to make much difference to them. So more importantly is owning the right assets and having the right headspace. We've done numbers and figures at Metropole Wealth Advisory, and we've actually been able to do those looking back at previous cycles and seen that, yeah, look, you may have bought a property $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 cheaper if you got the timing right, but that's a one-off sugar hit. It's nowhere near as important as getting an asset that grows at wealth-producing rates of return rather than average rate of return.
And I think that's why some people, I think, inadvertently bought in some markets, you know, call it regional markets or whatever, where they thought there would be that sugar hit, but it's a one-off and then it's flat and then it falls down. So you've got to be in it for the long haul. It's got to be sustainable.
I think that's an important fact. Time in the market is important. Now, you've got to be in with the right assets, but if you want to become wealthy, you really have to use the power of compounding and leverage, don't you? That's the route to making money work for you, making money work while you're asleep. And we've seen those charts of how, you know, it's the lily pond thing, isn't it, in some ways? You know, the lily pond, the number of lilies in the lily pond double and double and double, and the last doubling, it actually fills the lily pond. Much the same with if you own a property and it doubles in, increases in value by 7% per annum, in the first 10 years it almost doubles, but in the next 5 years it doubles again, Ken.
That's right. I mean, compound growth is just a phenomenal phenomena, if I can put it that way. And that's why we see some shows on TV, I forget what it's called, you know, I Want to Be a Millionaire or whatever, where the value of the prize doubles every answer you get right.
Oh, yeah.
But it goes from virtually nothing to $1 million within a couple of questions, and that's because of this compounding effect. A small number doubling doesn't make a lot of difference, but a big number doubling makes a huge difference. But to get to that big number to double, you had to have started off right with the smaller number.
I think another lesson that we got out of COVID, but it's something we've known all along, is that no one really knows what's going to happen to the property market. So sure, I made some forecasts in March 2020 suggesting that A-grade properties wouldn't drop much in value, but we didn't really know about how long the cycle would last, what impacts there would be. But in Australia, there's 25 million property experts. Everyone's got an opinion. you know what they say about opinions, Ken, they're like belly buttons, everyone's got one. Oh, right. but basically they're useless. But of course, even the property experts tend to get it wrong, and they're armed with all the research, all the information that's available. And the reason is that market movements, they're not an exact science. There's those experts, Ken, who come from the institutions and the share markets and the banks, and they tend to have all that research, and they've got it so wrong over the last couple of years because they forget the bit that property doesn't relate to with shares, and that's the human element.
Correct. And, you know, you don't sell a house, you know.
Yeah, you don't sell if things go wrong. You eat Maggi noodles.
That's it. And I think the other thing is, unfortunately, bad news sells better than good news. People are always talking about a major collapse to the Australian property market. Every time, I don't know, you've put up headlines and trick people into thinking, oh, that's the one that's currently the headline, but it was the one of the previous property cycle. So,
yes,
it's understanding the fundamentals of what drives property values. It's understanding what properties will do best within those parameters. And it's then having your finances ready, your structures ready to move on the investments when they become available.
So the answer really is, rather than trying to time the cycle, buy when you're ready, owning the right assets and having the right structures, as you say. But I think the other thing to remember is there's multiple property markets around Australia. So the media keeps talking about the Australian property market or the Sydney or Melbourne property market. Within Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, all the capital cities, there are multiple markets. There's the higher end markets, which have actually performed very strongly at the beginning of this cycle. All markets, as you said in our last podcast, the lower end, the more affordable ends of the market, the middle range and the top end all did well. But now affordability is starting to creep in, Ken. So if property values in some of those cheaper areas are now $100,000, $150,000 more, people don't have more money in their pay packet to pay more in those areas.
That's right. And look, there is a bit of a difference between buying a property to live in, which could be in a particular area because of particular circumstances, versus an investment property. I advocate, as I know you do and the rest of the team do, sometimes it's better to rent vest, you know, buy that property, put a tenant in it and continue renting. Because at the end of the day, I mean, what's the underlying objective? It's wealth creation. So I don't see anything wrong with renting as long as you've used your money somewhere else to grow wealth, as opposed to renting and then, you know, going out to the different places of entertainment.
Sure. So your parents probably taught you rent money is dead money, but it's not if somebody else is paying you their rent money. Now, again, this cycle is going to end and there's going to be a period of lower or no capital growth and even falling values. So one of the strategies we recommend for our clients is at times like that to actually manufacture capital growth. So if you can buy the type of property to which you can add value through renovations or development, that's a way of not being as fussed about timing in the market, Ken.
That's right. I mean, if you buy a property that is only going to perform in line with the market, you then do go through these vagrancies of, is it up, is it down? But if you add value, you know, a renovation, an improvement, your cost to do that is normally substantially less than the actual value you create. Because a lot of people don't like the inconvenience of doing a renovation. They want to go into a completed property, it's ready, I don't want to touch it. So when you've got that type of property that you've done your own improvement, the rent then is based on the end value, the improvement, not what it cost you.
Exactly. So I think as we're talking about timing the market, one last message I'd like to remind people of is that booms, like we've got at the moment, never last forever, but then neither do busts. So don't be surprised when they come around. Be prepared for them. We talked about that in the last podcast. By having a plan A and a plan B, it avoids you being sucked up in the booms and spat out during the busts if you've got the finance buffers to see you through. I think another important lesson out of COVID was the importance of investing in resilient large cities. Now, we know that this time round, regional Australia did pretty well. But I think an important lesson, Ken, is Melbourne, where I lived, survived more days of lockdown, and I think we had six lockdowns, more days of lockdown than anywhere else in the world. And despite that, our economy did okay, our property markets did okay, and it was the fact that we had multiple different industries, they were resilient. Fortunately, most of regional Australia didn't have as long lockdowns, as many issues, because I don't think the average small country town could survive the lockdown the length of Melbourne did, because it hasn't got that level of support with multiple industries. So even though we got through it this time around, I'd be cautious of investing in regional Australia or the small towns. Invest in the large cities, Ken.
Yeah, and I think we've seen some of those secondary areas, if I can call them that, without disparaging anybody. Yes, there was very large capital growth, but in most cases, it didn't pick up the previous losses. So, you know, even with this growth, they're still below the previous peak, so to speak.
Mm. So as we talk through the lessons of COVID in 2020, there's one that became very clear that we've discussed in previous podcasts, and it's the importance of location. I mean, we talk all the time about location doing 80% of the heavy lifting on your property investments, but the location isn't the location around the CBD, and it hasn't ever been. It's been the right suburbs, the right neighbourhood, the right demographics. But one thing I know from Melbourne was that people miss the third place. If our first place is your home and the second place is your work or your office, it's the ability to go to that third place, which was taken away from a lot of Melbournians, as may be in their favourite cafe, a gym, a place of worship, local shops, pubs. They miss the feeling and connection to others, having the outlet to break away from being in their home with the gym, the exercise. So the concept of the 20-minute neighbourhood the town planners have talked about for a long time, Ken, just came to the fore again. The fact that people would like to be within 20 minutes, I don't know, drive, walk, cycle from the shops, the amenities. That's not going to go away. We're back to supporting our local businesses again and our local neighbourhoods. We actually even know our neighbours' names again. That's interesting.
It is. And look, it's funny, I saw evidence of this quite a number of years ago, even with my kids, where, you know, they didn't want to own a car for whatever reason. So we ended up buying properties where they were within 20 minutes walking of exactly what you're talking about, restaurants, cafes, public transport. So they didn't need a car. That's really now been magnified into the family situation where people do enjoy just walking down to the shops, walking to wherever. It's funny, there's a joke in our family, in my family, that I walked to a local bush park, you know, first time in 20 years, you know. I never even knew it existed, but everybody else did. But so lots of people discovered, if you like, their suburb, if they had those things in there, to increase the joy and the benefit from it.
I think that's one of the trends that's going to remain. While a lot of fads have disappeared, the trend from working from home or more flexible hours, not necessarily working from home full-time, is going to be there. And the importance of neighbourhood, which is also going to mean that you're going to go to the local shops more. You may go to the cafe there to get your coffee just to have a break rather than go to the cafe in the middle of the CBD. So it's important to choose the right locations. Again, we come back to those locations where they're the more knowledge workers, the higher income earners, or the gentrifying suburbs. These suburbs often have a high walk score. There's a website called walkscore.com.au, and you can see how easy it is to walk. And that isn't happening in the outer suburbs. You're not going to get the 20-minute neighbourhood in the outer suburbs just because they don't have enough infrastructure. And the outer suburbs are unlikely to gentrify. That's where a lot of young first homeowners have had to go, and it's great that they've gotten to the property market. But I see moving forward we're going to have a two-tier property market where the wealthier, more affluent people, they're going to afford to and want to live close to the CBD, close to these 20-minute neighbourhood locations, not near the CBD, but close to the water and to where the action is. So while I said close to the CBD, I meant to the established areas rather than the outer suburbs, Ken.
Yeah, look, I saw maybe 30 years ago greenfield developments, new suburbs, if you like, you know, an hour out of Sydney. You know, they were built with a local park and those sorts of things. But that's all. There might have been a little lake or whatever. But they didn't necessarily build all the other things. So they sort of halfway got there. So maybe that's going to be a future trend where people can't afford to live closer to the city, but that's walkability is going to be important. But that's going to increase the entry price of these properties because it's land that, you know, the developer doesn't sell for housing.
Yes, yes.
You know, if there's got to be a shopping precinct, if there's got to be this, if there's got to be that. I think planning rules, planning regulations, I think will play a part of this where some councils have seen the benefits of this and are trying to keep people within their district. And I think new developments, I think we'll see some improvements in these facilities, but that's going to be, you know, developers will be, you know, drag kicking and screaming sort of thing.
And as you said, that's going to come at a cost. I think the other lesson, one of the many lessons that came out of COVID was the importance of owning the right assets. We've always known that. But as I've mentioned, A-grade assets held their own. And even though they dropped, they actually came back much quicker. Moving forward, as the cycle moves on, there always tends to be a bit of a flight to quality, Ken. So while there was a bit of FOMO, I think people are now starting to realise that, hey, I better be careful what I'm buying because the rising tide isn't going to lift all ships moving forward.
And, look, a common discussion with many new clients is, you know, keep your powder dry. You know, if you can't afford to buy that A-grade property or just slightly below, you know, wait a year. And, you know, don't sort of be pushed into, oh, the prices are going to rise and then I can't afford it. Because, yes, you'll miss out on 1 year's growth, but then you'll have the next 40.
That's a really good point. So when people come to Metropole to get strategic advice, one of the things we don't do is sell property. So we're paid to give strategic advice, which sometimes means don't do something for a while. That's hard for people to take, but I know I've made more money by not doing things or saying no to potential opportunities than I've made by doing things. So when people come along, Ken, just quickly explain what your role is at Metropole and how Metropole Wealth Advisory helps their clients.
Yep. So we offer a very holistic approach to people's wealth creation. So in essence, how do you grow, protect and pass on those assets? So we look at a person's situation, where they are now, where they want to be, and then go through the many different aspects that they need to consider with their wealth creation, you know, their income tax, their structuring, their business structure, risk management, estate planning. So we find the missing pieces of the jigsaw puzzle and then fill in the gaps. So we join the dots for people, and then to help people actually get a result, it's not just the recommendation, we then hold their hand through to execution. So we speak to the other professionals that they might employ, an accountant or a lawyer, and we speak to them and say, this is what you need to do for Ken. And if they don't know, we actually show them what to do and tell them what to do because we speak their lingo and we understand what needs to happen in the context of the whole, not just an isolated problem that could be right but is wrong when you add it into something else.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. So clearly your team at Metropole Wealth Advisory work closely with the property strategists if you want to understand how you can take advantage of the what's still left in this property cycle, but you can't just buy any property moving forward considering that the rising tide is not going to lift all ships, considering that we're moving into a time of a two-tier market, and particularly knowing that the importance of Ken's asset protection structures and setting things up right is important. Go to metropole.com.au, find out more about what we do, and why not leave your details so that we can have a chat with you about it? Now, Ken, just looking at a few other things that came out of the last couple of years with COVID, houses outperformed apartments. Now, there's nothing that unusual about this, but the gap has become wider than normal. Now, Sydney was more attuned to apartment living than Melbourne, which has caught up, and Brisbane really hasn't as much, or the smaller capital cities haven't as much. And apartments in Sydney are still performing very strongly, but unless they're family-friendly apartments in Melbourne, the high-rise apartments, the many high-density apartments haven't done as well. But I see now there's quite a gap between the value of apartments and houses. There hasn't been one as big as this for a long time, which means that if you get in a small established block of what I call family-friendly apartments in one of those 20-minute neighbourhoods, there's likely to be good upside moving forward.
Yeah, and I think we get down to that uniqueness of a property. I think over the last decade, we've seen a lot of high-rise, and there's been a lot of issues with high-rise apartments of late. And therefore, that's dragged down the price of apartments, which is then as an average. But, you know, an apartment with a sunny balcony, a small, you know, maybe a courtyard, all those things, you know, where people don't need a house because they're either at the beginning of their life or at the other end where they don't want to look after a house, can fit in. So I think the word apartment can be a bit misleading. Again, it comes down to the specific property, and that's where uniqueness, and I think the actual property you buy, becomes even more important.
Well, while there's been a lot of house building related to the home builder grants and things like that recently, there's been very few new apartments being built. Projects are being completed, but very few apartment development approvals being approved. So I can see a shortage of apartments moving forward because as we grow, and there's a business plan, Australia has a business plan of getting to 40 million people by the middle of this century. They've got to live somewhere. So there are going to be lots more apartment buildings being built. They're going to cost more just because of building costs. They're going to cost more because I think some lessons have been learned by the challenges of the Opal Tower and all those other high-rise issues. So I can only see the cost of apartments going up, new apartments, and they're hard to be sold at the moment. Developers can't get the off-the-plan sales to get it all working. So be careful. Don't just buy any apartment. But I guess one of the interesting lessons was that houses have outperformed, but that probably leaves a gap, and maybe it's not a bad time to look at what's available. But as I said, we're going to have a two-speed property market moving forward, Ken, and I think there's going to be a fragmentation in society. We're losing the middle class a bit, and I'm not comfortable with that because that could lead to issues. But people tend to think Australia is the bell curve with most average Australians in the middle, some really rich people on one side and some poor people on the other. That's not the way it's worked. The rich keep getting richer. There's more millionaires in Australia than ever, and Credit Suisse suggests there's going to be another 1.8 millionaires created in the next 5 years, and that's on the basis that they already own assets. They own real estate or they own shares or money in their super funds.
Yeah, and I think it's, unfortunately, I don't think it's got anything to do necessarily with the tax system or this or that. It's those people who have started to create wealth have learnt and worked out what to do. So they do that in good times and in bad times. So that means they just keep getting better, whereas people who haven't educated themselves then will just tread water and therefore go backwards. Because treading water effectively means you go backwards, and then that'll split that gap. So I think the middle class will morph into either a richer component or a poorer component. And that's not a good or a bad thing. We're not disparaging people. Life is what it is. But people need to take into account if they need to or if they want to create wealth, they've got to change their mindset. And then they got to get the right advice and then go ahead and implement within that comfort zone.
I think the right advice is an important thing that you said, because there's everyone giving advice at the moment. So be careful. There's a lot of vested interests, and there's a whole range of new gurus. That happens every time the property cycle moves on. Ken, you and I have fun every now and then getting together. We pull out the old magazines, the old Australian Property Investor magazine that went broke, and we play this game. Where are they now? And you see all these people who were there then who gave good advice. Often they remember they used to be in front of their red Ferraris. They're not anymore. They're not around. So be careful who you listen to.
That's right. The most expensive advice is the free advice, because that person really has nothing to, you know, be judged against.
It's free to you. Somebody's paying them. So you've got to be clear that the project marketer is being paid by the developer. A lot of those people who call themselves real estate gurus are being paid by the developer as well. So get advice, but be careful who you get it from. And as I said, moving forward, I see a two-speed property market where the more affluent areas, where people are earning more and can afford to, are going to keep improving. Gentrifying suburbs will keep improving themselves as more affluent people move in. And in the outer suburbs and working class suburbs, and again, it's not disparaging, as you say, the truth is people haven't got more money in their pay packet, so they can't keep paying more. And when interest rates go up, they're the ones that are going to have trouble. But similarly, tenants, rents have actually gone up 9% this year. The rents have gone up more than they have for a couple of decades, but the average tenant's wages haven't gone up. So there's going to be not just mortgage stress moving forward, Ken. I see rental stress in some locations.
Absolutely. And, you know, while this pandemic, COVID, I think it's one of our bullet points later on, you know, the government introduced legislation to protect a lot of tenants. You know, we can't expect that that's going to be long term. You know, the banks put moratoriums on repayments as well. That was sort of a cushion, a false safety net. You really can't necessarily assume, the same as we expect things to happen, not we know they will, you can't assume that those sorts of safety nets will be there next time.
Good point. Now, another lesson from COVID, and to be honest, this did surprise me. I'm always learning. I'm keen to keep learning. Is immigration isn't as important as we thought it would be? I know that a lot of people thought when our borders closed, that property values would drop. But despite the borders closed, there was growth in our property markets, as we keep mentioning. But this was mainly because this was a cycle of upgraders taking advantage of the low interest rates and also COVID changing our requirements of how we want to live. So what happened was first home buyers came out of being renters. They upgraded from being renters to take advantage of the opportunities. The low interest rates made people move home. Millennials moved out of apartments and moved into houses as their family formation stage. People renovated their homes. So it really was a time of upgrading. But I see, well, of course, the lack of students and overseas tourists decimated the CBD apartment market, but the borders are opening, Ken, and with a shortage of properties and rising rents and rising property values, and other than the CBD, very little vacancies, this has got to be very strong for our property markets moving forward when immigration reemerges, and it clearly will.
Yeah, I think immigration impacted more on having people to, you know, pick fruit and veggies, you know, to serve coffee at the cafes, not necessarily the impact on house prices that a lot of us thought would have been there. So, and we're starting to see the emergence of that, where lots of cafes are, you know, only doing two services a day, you know, breakfast and lunch or lunch and dinner, because they don't have enough people. So it's interesting to see signs now when you go into a restaurant or a cafe, you know, keep your aggro down, you know, I can't find more staff.
Yes. Yeah. So I think skilled workers are going to be coming in as well. And the government needs to grow our economy, grow our GDP. And one way of doing that is to have more people earning, spending, paying taxes. So skilled migrants are going to come in. That's one way of the government slowly repaying its debt. So there's no doubt that the people are going to come in, and they start off tending to be tenants and eventually buying homes, but they in general not going to go to regional Australia. They're not going to go to the small capital cities. They're going to go to where the jobs are, where they're most needed.
That's right. That's just going to be magnified more and more, I think, as we go forward.
as we finish off our chat about the lessons we've learned from COVID, there's been some social transformations as we've both doing. We're working from home. We're both recording this podcast from home. We're using a program. It's not Zoom, but gee, life's changed with Zoom at the moment. I've noticed, Ken, there are two types of days when you work from home. There are days when a parcel gets delivered, and there are other days. It's interesting that my postman now knows me by name because he brings parcels along to the front door.
That's right. And now that, you know, you've got cameras, you know, on your doorbell that you can see on your phone. And look, one of the big booming sectors was the parcel delivery, you know, the government services, the third parties. But, you know, I saw an ad yesterday, Uber Eats, that we know is there, delivers. They now deliver alcohol. So you get your meal and your grog. So I think working from home, having a dedicated space. So if you need to do your Zoom call or whatever, you can do it in a quiet environment with a reasonable background. That's going to be important. So when people are looking for that property to rent or to own, you know, that's a room or a segment of the property that will need to be part of the decision making.
Now, in our last chat, we talked about the importance of neighbourhood, and I think the transition of working from home for some of the time just reinforces the importance of living in a 20-minute neighbourhood. As I said at the beginning of this show, if you haven't listened to last week's episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, please go back and listen to that because there were lots of other great points Ken and I learned from COVID. But I think another important point was getting to know your neighbours, getting to know people, and actually the talk about mental health, a lot of it was brought out. It was made okay. Are you okay is a question to ask your friends, but it was okay not to be okay, Ken.
Yeah, and I saw an interesting article and presentation on, it was like a social experiment, a series of Zoom meetings over a period of time where, you know, the initial ones, the people dressed up, they combed their hair, you know. By the last one, they didn't shave, they wore scrunchy clothes, they didn't comb their hair. And what this showed was this is an indication of people probably having some sort of issues, emotional issues, depression, whatever. So there's many different ways that manifests itself. So we should be on the lookout and not be afraid to, as you say, ask somebody, are you okay?
Ken, we've discussed lots of lessons we'd learned about getting on in life through COVID that we can take it into the next stages of our investing life. Would you like to share one last one that you found was important?
I think the skill of being a good negotiator, you know, for maintaining relationships, for getting wage increases. So even in a low wage increase environment, lots of people did get wage increases. So it's because they weren't afraid to ask for it. They knew how to ask for it. And they knew that they were actually supporting the increased request with of actually being able to increase the profitability of the business by doing 1, 2, 3, 4. So let's share in that together. So don't be afraid to negotiate, but know why you're doing it and have your ducks in a row when you're making that argument.
Well, Ken, that's a beautiful way of finishing off because it's a good plug for my latest book, Negotiate, Influence, Persuade, and you didn't even know I was going to do that. But that actually has done really well, and I'm really proud to say only yesterday, got an email from another international publisher to translate it, so it's going to be translated into 2 foreign languages so far. And the concept of Negotiate, Influence, Persuade, the book, which you can get at michaelyardneybooks.com.au, michaelyardneybooks.com.au, I'll leave a link in the show notes, is that success in life depends upon your ability to, well, you're calling it negotiate, I'm saying influence, because it doesn't matter whether you're a buyer or a seller, we're always negotiating in life, Ken, aren't we? Whether it's with our spouses about who takes out the rubbish or who does things with your kids or at work, and it's very, very important. So what I've done in my book, Negotiate, Influence, Persuade, is help people understand the psychology behind it. And I'm actually very proud. It's done really, really well. So, yeah, I think that's a great way of finishing off this chat about the lessons from COVID. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to catching up again on another podcast real soon.
Thank you, everyone.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In my mindset message today, I'd like to share with you what I think is probably the biggest lesson I learned from Jim Rohn. And you know I quote my mentor very often. But he called it the great challenge in life. He said, here's the great challenge in life. You can have more than you have got now because you can become more than you are. I could stop there, and that's a great enough lesson, but let me repeat it. You can have more than you've got because you can become more than you are. And Jim Rohn said he found that your income seldom exceeded your own personal development, and I fully agree with that. You see, once in a while, you can take a lucky jump. You can buy the right property and the market suddenly picks up, or you can get into a business and it suddenly changes. But you get an inheritance, you win the lottery. But I've seen it over and over again that unless you grow out to where it is, you end up going back to where you are. Somebody once said, if you took all the money in the world and divided it equally amongst everyone, it would soon be back into the same pockets again. And I agree with that. However, you can have more because you can become more. You see, here's how the other side of the coin reads. Unless you change how you are, you'll always have what you've got. The major thing that makes a difference is what you do. It's the human effort that counts. So in order to have more, you need to become more. I remember Jim Rohn saying that some people said, if I had a job, I could really pour it on, but I've got this lousy job, so it's not going to work. I'm not going to work hard at it. If you've got that philosophy, Jim Rohn said, you're destined to stay in that bad job. Jim Rohn said, some people say, if I had lots of money, I'd be really generous, but I don't have much money, so I'm not generous. And he went on to say, see, you've got to change that philosophy or you'll never have lots of money. So my message to you is, unless you change, it won't change. Amazingly, however, when you throw out the blame list and start to become more of yourself, you learn more, you grow more, then all of a sudden, everything is going to change around you. Even though I've been investing in property for 5 decades, I'm still learning things. And boy, did COVID remind me of some lessons. If you got some benefit, if you learned something from my chat with Ken today or in my last show, please tell somebody else who you think would benefit as well. Our aim is to make as many people as financially literate as possible, as many property investors as successful as possible. So help me in my quest. Just tell somebody. Just tell one person about the Michael Yardney podcast. Or, of course, you can tell the world by leaving a review. I'll be back again real soon, but you can catch me on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney. And why not join me in my private Facebook group? Go to Facebook and look for the Property Update private Facebook group. I'd love to share my tips with you each day. I'll be back again real soon, but in the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?